Good morning, good people. Happy New Year. This is Kiplin Primus, your host for The Local Take on Jazz 91.9 WCLK. And this morning, we're joined by one of our recurring guests, Miss Pamela Perkins Karn of the Interfaith Children's Movement. Pam, welcome back.
Thanks so much, Kiplin, and Happy New Year.
Well, I am always happy to have you here because I am inspired about the work that the Interfaith Children's Movement does. Could you share with our listeners who may not be familiar exactly what the Interfaith Children's Movement is and how you all advocate on behalf of the children in our community?
Absolutely. The Interfaith Children's Movement is an interfaith, which means all different faith traditions are part of a movement that advocates for children in Georgia on the many different issues that children face, such as juvenile justice, education, health care, child poverty. And so Interfaith Children's Movement was founded in 2001 here in Atlanta, and by a group of folks who really saw the needs of children and understood that the faith community has a special responsibility to ensure that children are well, to ensure their well-being. And so since 2001, we have been raising our voices and walking out, if you will, our faith traditions in protecting, fighting for legislation that protects children, fighting for legislation that ensures that children receive the services that they need, whether that's children in foster care, children in the juvenile justice system, children in general, that they are protected, that they are safe, and that their families can thrive.
And this would seem to be almost the manifesto of our country. You know, children, treat them well, they're our leaders of tomorrow. But there's so many gray areas that seem, that need light shone in those areas. And to me, that's what Interfaith Children Movement does. I know last year we helped to promote your legislative agenda of Too Young to Suspend, which brings me to 2018. What is it that ICM is doing on the legislative level in this year that we should get our listeners and parents and all faith organizations behind to promote and support?
Well, we definitely still need the support on Too Young to Suspend. And just to unpack that a little bit, we're talking about children in pre-K through third grade who are given out-of-school suspension or expelled from school within our public school system. And what we have found out and what others, you know, research has shown us is that that is the opposite of what we should be doing for our children, our youngest learners. We should not be removing them from the learning environment, but we should be seeking those underlying factors, seeking ways to address the underlying factors that may be contributing to the behaviors that are deemed as unacceptable within the classroom setting. We should be looking at hunger. We should be looking at poverty. We should be looking at zero tolerance policies and understanding how they contribute to funneling children out of the school system into the juvenile and criminal justice systems at that age. I know people's eyes kind of fly open when you say that children that young are funneled into the juvenile justice system, but it absolutely is true. And so back in 2012, I believe, or 13, on the national level, the U.S. Department of Education's Civil Rights Division and the Department of Justice both acknowledge that the school-to-prison pipeline, which is what we're talking about, is very much a real trend in our nation. And so Georgia is not immune from that, and we have a real issue still with funneling children out of our school system based on behaviors into the juvenile and criminal justice system.
And one of the reasons that that still stands out to me is that in the state of Georgia, 15,000 children in pre-K are suspended each year. And we're talking like 4 and 5 year olds. And to start these children at that age on the school to prison pipeline, it seems sad, and it seems like there ought to be other options.
Right, and actually it's a cumulative number. It's pre-K through third grade, more than 14,000 were given the out-of-school suspension. And so You're right, absolutely right. That is something that should not be done. That is an indicator that we are not paying attention to our children and their potential. That we are not giving them the best care that they need. That we are not understanding our children. What we're doing is throwing them away. When you start at that age, telling children school is not for you, because that's what you're absolutely telling that child. School is not for you. Then we will see the negative effects of that. Part of that is also we're not understanding perhaps some of the traumatic experiences children are having at that age. Those underlying factors, again, looking at what's going on with the child in on the personal level, what's going on at home, what's going on in the community, what's going on at school, and then determining from that, you know, from making an informed decision as to what are the best resources, what are the best ways of benefiting that child so that child can stay in school and that child can stay in a learning environment.
And one of the things that I think a lot of people don't understand is that we do have to educate all of our children. And you cannot right. pick and choose and say, well, these children will get an education and these children we're going to suspend and expel. Because at some point, you've got to address those underlying issues or you deal with all of your money going to keep people locked up.
Absolutely. And it's also the dismantling of families. When we funnel our children out of the education system, we also negatively impact their adult life, you know, their potential as an adult. That means that it's more likely for them not to have an intact family, for them not to be, you know, productive citizens. Because, right, if you're funneling people out of education and into criminal and juvenile justice systems, the odds are you're not going to become that productive citizen that everyone should have a right to become. And so if we're starting so early, then we are setting ourselves up for failure. We're setting Georgia up for failure. We're setting our communities up for failure. And we know that some communities have a harder time than others. We know that certain children are the ones who are more likely to receive out-of-school suspension and expulsion than others. We know that children of color, we know that children with learning disabilities or learning differences, we know that boys of color outnumber all other children in receiving out-of-school suspensions. And so we know that these characteristics make that child more likely to be discriminated against. And so why are we not looking at that? Why are we not addressing that as a primary issue so that all children, to your point, should be educated, that all children receive the education that they deserve?
And we have gotten into this place, and we've talked about this before, where it seems the only solutions being offered are more punitive. And this is coming from our legislators.
Absolutely. And our legislators listen to their constituents. Now, we claim that we are all constituents of every elected official at the Capitol because they all vote on statewide issues. And so just because you're from Savannah, you're voting on, it doesn't mean that you're not my legislator, because you're voting on something that will impact me as well. Just because you're from Raven County, you're still impacting the state of Georgia because you are voting on statewide issues, and education is one of those statewide issues. And so when they hear from their constituents, what they call the constituents, people within their community who actually vote for them, they hear the negative talk because, you know, whether it's out of fear, whether this is out of frustration, progress takes time. You know, if you have the level of poverty that we have here in Georgia, where upwards of 28% of children and families can be, you know, live in poverty, in some counties it could be upwards of 50%. There has to be reasonable, rational solutions and helpful solutions to turn that around. Jailing people, you know, from poverty, for being poor, is not the answer. And so what we have heard from community members is more lock them up, throw away the key for the parents of children who may have involvement in the juvenile justice system or who may receive out-of-school suspensions in schools, who may be having trouble in school, is to go after their parents. And if we go after their parents, then that will make the family somehow more resilient, or it will help the child in some way. And all we're doing is continually splitting up families.
And it's destabilizing the environment that the child is already struggling to learn and be productive in.
Absolutely. Because children love their parents. They do. You know, children love their parents. You may not love their parents, but that child loves his or her mother or father. And so to take that away, to introduce that kind of trauma for no, you know, there's not a criminal activity taking place. There's not abuse or neglect taking place. So to introduce a split up of the family as a, you know, that type of trauma into that family affects that child's ability to thrive. And so instead of, you know, splitting up families and creating legislation that says we go after the parents if the child hasn't done his homework, that we provide support systems, that we become a support system for families in need. And let's help keep families intact.
And that brings us right to one of the things that you all do each year that I have participated in and found it very inspirational, which is your Legislative Day at the Capitol. Could you share with our listeners what that is, how they can support it, and if children who want to be involved can get involved with this day?
Yes, and thank you so much. Yes, February 15th is 2018 is our day at the Capitol. We will have our base of operation, if you will, at Trinity United Methodist Church. That's where we will gather. And we will gather there starting at 9 a.m. and we will go until 3 p.m. It is an opportunity for people to come and receive advocacy training, how to become an effective advocate, to talk with your legislators, to understand what that's about, to introduce yourself if you don't know who your legislator is. We do recommend you do find that out because you're voting for somebody. And so come down. We go over the issues that children are facing. For example, we will talk about school-to-prison pipeline. We will talk about the mental health commission on children that just the Commission on Children's Mental Health, they just released their report, and that was commissioned by the governor. We will walk through that to find out what we should be advocating for on behalf of children. We know that Georgia is low when it comes to having resources for mental health for children. So that's another issue. We will also be there, like I said, from 9 to 3. So anytime, you don't have to be there, you know, at noon and not be a part of it. You can come at 1 and we will still be there and help you through this. So come out. We have children who come, students who come. We're always excited to see children advocate on their own behalf. And we've had some really great responses from legislators when they see children down there giving voice to their own issues. And so we look forward to having another wonderful day. Be a part of it. You can go on our website and register right now. And there's no cost to it. So just come on down.
And it is. It's inspiring to see these young children.
Young children.
Talk to their middle schoolers, talk to their legislators. Most of them knew who their legislators were.
Yes.
They fill out the forms. You know, the legislators come out and they stand there and they talk to them. And it was inspiring to me because it was something that I'd never done before. So even as an adult, to see these young people, as you said, advocate for themselves, it was a very powerful thing to see. So you mentioned the website. Could you just give that address again? If they're students, if they're teachers who want to bring a couple of kids, there's still time for you to participate.
Absolutely. Our website is interfaithchildrensmovement.org. That's all spelled out, and so you can't miss it. interfaithchildrensmovement.org. And it's on the homepage where you can just click on it and learn a little bit more about ICM Day at the Capitol. Also, learn more about our children's conference that's coming up on February 1st. And so that helps you also prepare for our day at the Capitol because we'll be having some great speakers there and issues of children that we will be fleshing out and discussing. And so looking forward to it. The title, the theme this year is Creating Hope in Georgia's Children in the Midst of Trauma. So love to have everyone come out.
We're going to talk about that. So you all are doing, this is the 4th annual Children's Summit by the Interfaith Children's Movement, and it's taking place on February 1st. So tell our listeners, how did the summit come to be? What was the decision to create this event? And I know there is a focus on mental health this year. Why the mental health focus, and why it is important for parents, faith leaders, community leaders to participate in this event in support of our children?
Well, one of the reasons we created this summit, this celebration of children summit, is because there seemed to be a lack of opportunity for the community, for faith leaders, faith communities, for grassroots community members, for parents, for foster parents to come to a setting where they could receive the information they needed about what's taking place with our children in a setting that was not conducive to their level of understanding. You know, we can attend professional conferences, and you know the language that's spoken is in whatever legally, scientific,
right, academic,
and it's not getting to the point, you know, of where you are. And so we said, why doesn't ICM host a conference or summits where we can invite those professionals, bring them in, but have it community oriented, so that our parents, our teachers, educators, anyone, actually it's open to the public, our faith communities can come and be a part of this type of setting and learn from it. And not just learn from it, but then to become part of the advocacy for children. So there, it's not just come in, sit down and talk about something, but come in, learn, as we say, learn, pray, act, but also discuss and then act. And it's a lead up to Day at the Capitol so that it helps you to be a better advocate as well.
And that ACT part of it, I know at the summit, you all break down some of the legislation that is coming before our representatives.
Right.
You guys break it down so that it's easy to understand, so that a parent, a Sunday school teacher, anyone can see how those things might impact the children that they engage with and the community as a whole.
Right, absolutely, because our faith communities are, you know, outside of the home and school, there's that faith community, whether it's the church, the synagogue, the masjid, the mosque, the temple. Those are those three kind of ground zero locations for children and families. And so as a recipient of those children and families, you need to be better equipped to address what they're going through. Parents bring, or the school may call the church and say, so-and-so is having some issues, or we need something for so-and-so. That call may be to the church. So why wouldn't the church be more engaged in understanding what are those factors that are affecting this child's life? What is it that's going on in school? Why Johnny is having some issues? You know, what's going on at home? So we always say, you know, the home, the faith community, and the school. Those are those three community-oriented places where children and families really are existing. You know, we call upon business in the corporate world, but really when you look at communities, those are the three entities that really intersect with each other.
And that's where children are guided, they're learning, where they get the most support for right. what it is that they're doing.
Right, absolutely. So to be better stewards, if you will, of our children and families, we need our faith community to come and to be engaged and to learn what's going on, to learn about legislation that's impacting the families that attend your worship services, to understand how they're impacting, to understand why families may be stressed out. If there's legislation that's saying that a parent can be pulled into court because the child hasn't done his homework, you need to understand that what impact that has on a family that's struggling.
And there's legislation now where parents might be fined $1,000 for their child having trouble in school.
Right. Absolutely.
$1,000. So again, if you've already got this unstable environment for a child, $1,000 is a lot of money.
I know very few people who can whip out a checkbook and write $1,000. And so this is impacting people and children and families in poverty. And so we see that as discriminatory, because if it's a family of wealth, $1,000 is not, you know, it's a drop in the bucket. But for a family that has very little means, $1,000 is that, you know, could be, you know, 2 months' rent.
It's no longer punitive. It's beyond punitive.
It's like debtor's prison. I mean, if you think about it, you're punishing people for not having money, you know, for being poor.
And we pay for that.
We pay to lock
people up because they don't have money.
Right. So we're paying for that. And the Southern Center for Human Rights just won some cases about locking people up before because they couldn't afford to pay post-bail. So you can't have debtor's prisons in the United States.
Or we didn't think we could have debtor's prisons in the United States. So for our listeners who are as impassioned about what the Interfaith Children's Movement is doing as I am, and they want to get involved, how can they get more information? How can they get involved, get their organizations and their faith community involved?
Definitely, you can go to our website and sign up. It's interfaithchildrensmovement.org. You can give us a call at 770-498-2141. Or you can send us an email, info@interfaithchildrensmovement.org. So give us a call, drop us a note, or go on our site and take a look there. Just browse around. And you can also still contact us from our website as well. Oh, and follow us on Facebook and Twitter. So we're there as well. We're in social media land as well.
And if you look around the city, you'll see Interfaith Children's Movement everywhere. On the Beltline, you guys have some artwork. And I'm just so, again, amazed at what you all are doing and how you all are positively impacting the children across our state and in our community. And Pamela, I just want to thank you so much for what the Interfaith Children's Movement is doing and has done and will do.
Well, we thank you, Kipling, and thank WCLK for being that voice to get the word out and to really have the kinds of discussions that we really need to have within our community. So thank you for your passion. Thank you for the support, and thank you for your commitment.
It's interfaithchildrensmovement.org.